The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. From the sun to the plant to you, go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all the products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic combining spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Find Terraflora and the full line of products at enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, the new standard in pet food, the only complete line of USDA organically certified pet food. Crazy Water, infused by Mother Nature, not some random factory. Paleo Magazine, now all digital. Go to paleomagazine.com to subscribe. The Wellbeing Journal, Veg World Magazine, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and Thorn Research. Visit our dispensary at oneliferadio.com for 20% off and free shipping. You can find more information on all of our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the oneliferadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in sunny Southern California on ABC News Talk. Happy Labor Day, everyone. How you doing, Ronaldo?
I'm doing great. How you doing? You got it together over there?
I got it together. You know what I did? I'll just, you know, for everybody that's listening, this is live radio, and that's one of the things that makes it so damn exciting. It really is exciting to do live radio, especially in such a great town like Dallas-Fort Worth, or I should say towns, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And of course, you know, we're on iHeartMedia, so we can be heard worldwide on the stream. But the cool thing, so here's what I did. So I'm getting used to this new Comrex, you know, and you and I are connected live because you've got the bricks there and I've got it here. And so, but I logged in, but I forgot to hit the connect button. Okay. That's what was wrong, because we didn't have any sound at first. And I was kind of panicking, going, oh my gosh. And I plugged the headphones back in and out, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And then it's like, duh, Bernadette, you forgot to hit connect. So we're here. Wasn't too bad though, right?
Not too bad.
No one had a heart attack?
No.
Okay, well, good.
We're all good.
That's really good. But as I said, happy Labor Day, everyone. I guess I always think of Labor Day is when fall officially begins, because, you know, back in the day, that's when school used to go back. And I used to get so depressed when I knew Labor Day was coming, because I used to have so much fun in the summer in upstate New York when I was a kid, climbing trees and, you know, going to the Cape and just doing all these things. And not Cape Cod, okay? Cape Vincent. So, big difference, you know, real small town. In fact, my parents got married in Cape Vincent, New York, and it's kind of funny. They had their first restaurant in Cape Vincent, and guess what it was called, Ronaldo?
What was it?
Well, my last name is Fiaschetti, and that rhymes with spaghetti. And so, you know, my dad, I'm sure it was his idea since it was his last name, but they named it Fiaschetti Spaghetti, and they had a spaghetti house. And that's actually where they had the reception too, is at their first restaurant.
That's
too.
Nice.
So isn't that cute?
Yeah.
It's cute. And I know somebody else who's very cute. I love this woman, Autumn Connolly. How are you doing today? Are you there on the line with us?
I'm here. I'm doing great.
Good.
Sounds
good.
Like you're doing good too.
I am. Well, you know what? You have to choose to be happy, right? And there's so much we're going to talk about today. I always love having Autumn on the show. If this is your first time joining One Life Radio, you're in for a treat, because Autumn Connolly is a wonderful woman. She is. She lives in the Sky Islands of Arizona with her three kiddos and her animal babies. And she's also the creator of Anvil Traditional Healing, a company dedicated to restoring microbiome health through diet. And she actually has an amazing product that she sells on Amazon. It's a kefir do-it-yourself kit. And what's the name of it, Autumn? I always forget.
It's Anvil Traditional Healing Kefir Starter Kit.
Well, there you go. And you're just incredible. The knowledge that you have about kefir, the microbiome, so many things. She's a self-taught vegan chef, a serial gardener, and an avid believer in and a teacher of the healing powers of meditation and love. You can contact her at meditatewithautumn@gmail.com. And today you picked an interesting subject. And I haven't read the book, The Alchemist, in probably 12 years. So I was so happy when you picked the subject. So powerful lessons from The Alchemist. Let's start with this. What do you want us to know about the life lessons from The Alchemist, Autumn?
Well, you know, the first thing that I like to talk about is this is one of those books, you know, people can kind of groan and moan about reading any sort of spiritual book or anything. It always seems like it might be some kind of a drag or something you're going to force yourself to read. But this is one of those exceptions. It's a really, really entertaining story, and you just accidentally learn stuff along the way. So it's always a book that I like to recommend to people when they're trying to sort of, you know, or when they're at one of those maybe crossroads in life where they're trying to figure themselves out or get a get in better touch with the universe or something. This is one of those books that is like, it's an entertaining, fictional read that actually has a lot of self-help stuff kind of woven into it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I think one of my favorite sayings that goes along with this book is sometimes you win and sometimes you learn. And those lessons are the things that really help to turn you into that wonderful person, that peaceful, loving, smart person, because the only way you can learn is through your mistakes, really.
One of the quotes from it is, you know, the secret to life is to be knocked down 7 times and get up that 8th time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you just, you know, in pursuit of following your dreams or following your happiness, it's not going to be this rosy path. You have to learn from the experiences, and the experience sometimes seem like a negative, but when you look at the full picture, it almost always winds up being a positive. And so if you give up because, you know, something gets hard, then you're giving up on that success that could just be right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so many lessons in this book. And I remember when I first read it, I was describing it to somebody yesterday about how The Alchemist makes you feel. It just makes you feel warm and fuzzy. It's just a good read.
Yeah.
It just makes you feel like everything's going to be okay. And it's a great book for anybody young to get started. Seriously, just beginning their journey of this thing called life. I remember back a few months ago, right when all the COVID thing started, or maybe it was even before, not that it really matters, but I gifted the book to everyone on the team. And some of them had heard of it, and some of them had never heard of it or heard of it but never purchased it. So it's a great book to give to someone young as they begin their life. But let's talk about some of the important lessons. I know that one of the principles that you wanted to talk about is personal destinies.
Right, exactly. It's like, you know, one of the resounding themes throughout the book is that, you know, what we're all basically looking for is to fulfill our personal destiny, you know, and it can look drastically different from one person to another. But essentially what it means is to follow your heart, follow the things that truly make you feel like you, you know, the way that I like to explain it to people is by remembering who you were as a child and what gave you that true, authentic joy as a child, and try to find something in your adult life that brings you that same joy. It may be something similar to what it was when you were a child or some derivative of it, but in any case, you know, we all know that feeling, that complete feeling of satiation, of happiness. And, you know, so many of us strive for money or for love or respect or status or something along those lines. And rather than trying to fill ourselves with these outside, you know, standards or with these outside measures of superiority, if you just find what it is that makes you happy in your heart center, that goes the distance. So
absolutely. And you talk about being happy. So many people, like, they don't, like, I want to be happy. How do I be happy? I think that one of the big mistakes that people make, and my dad used to say this all the time, never put money before people. And there was a book that I was reading, The Power of Mindfulness. It talks about that same thing, that relationships matter more than money. And I think our country is ranked 18th out of on the happiness scale, and one of the reasons why is because we focus too much on money instead of relationships and prioritize relationships. And I think it's a big mistake, right?
I think so too. I mean, it is one of those things where you get off track and suddenly it becomes this all-encompassing, you know, kind of feeling where you have to earn money. I mean, don't get me wrong, having a little bit more money definitely makes life easier in some aspects.
Sure.
But as long as your basic needs are covered, you know, realistically, what brings you true everlasting joy are the relationships. You know, would you rather be at work all day or work, you know, 70 hours a week? Or would you rather spend time, you know, building your home or watching your family grow, watching your garden grow, watching your pets grow? You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
you gotta, at some point there's this balance where you realize, you know, what I relate it to is your root chakra needs. All your basic survival needs are financially met. Now, is it wrong to pursue more money? No. If you're doing something that you really enjoy, that may be your personal destiny. But for most people, it does revolve around relationships. It does revolve around doing something that you feel is generally contributing to the greater good of the world in some way, shape, or form.
Oh my gosh, I love this conversation. And I know for me, it's never been about the money. And I really believe that that's one of the reasons I had the success that I've had is because I wasn't focused on the money. And I was enjoying my life, enjoying my relationships, loving working hard and working towards a dream, whether we got there or not. You know, I think so many people forget that they do. And that if they focus too much on the money, it actually cripples you in so many ways.
Of course.
It absolutely cripples you. You know, earlier today, Marie Early, our producer behind the scenes, sent me an article where it was talking about Pizza Patron and Wingstop. And I just can't even tell you how thrilled I was to read it. And not because it's not even seeing my name in print, but I sat there for a while and I thought back all the wonderful memories, how thankful and how much gratitude that I have for the universe for giving me the health that I have. Just all these things, all the people that helped us build it, that worked with us for so many years, and just all these great relationships. And I just had the most beautiful feeling deep in my soul, you know, just so much gratitude.
Yeah.
But I never worked for the money. That's the whole thing. I didn't work that hard for the money. And people need to understand that it doesn't bring you the joy that you think it will. It's the journey.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, but then it does also relate back, you know, following the lines of the alchemist, it relates back to that being one of the experiences. You know, some people may have to go through, you know, there was a certain time in my life where I had to go through the idea of, you know, having a certain income would make things easier. And at the same time, you realize how much clearer it makes things in the today. When you look back at yesterday, you go, oh, huh, how funny that was. That didn't make me happy, and now things are different, and yet my happiness level has far exceeded where I ever thought it could be. But, you know, without that experience, without that personal relation to a situation, it's difficult to come to that understanding. You know, it's like when your mom kind of tells you something, you know, you're like, yeah, whatever, mom. And then a few years later, you go through it, and you're like, oh, mom was right.
Yeah. Mom's always right, isn't she? Or typically, maybe 99% of the time. But we're going to go to break. Love being on the air with you, dear. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Autumn Connolly, a dear friend of mine. And Mary Holland actually is coming up at the half, the Children's Health Defense Update. You're not going to want to miss it. She is an absolute rock star. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
And Aldo Davis on the music. Always great choices, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in sunny Southern California. I have my dear friend, Autumn Connolly, on the line. We are talking about the powerful lessons from the book, The Alchemist. Okay, let's continue on with this. I'm really enjoying the conversation, Autumn. I know you are, too. Let's talk about this. The universal language. What is the universal language and the soul of the world?
It's funny because I was just having this talk with my 10-year-old son while we were walking home the other day. And I feel like the universal language and the soul of the world could obviously mean things to different people. But in general, what I like to speak about is it means your connection to everything around you. And in the book, the allegory stems from the main character being a shepherd and him realizing that he's able to actually communicate with his sheep. Of course, you know, not through any traditional standards of communication, but he starts to realize that when you do immerse yourself in nature, when you take yourself out of the so-called human world and you connect with the animal world or plant world around you, even the desert at some point, he talks about being able to communicate with it. You know, when you really spend time focusing on these details of the natural world, that you begin to realize the communication that's ever present. You know, it's not so much unlike the way fungi communicate, you know, through these other channels under the ground, or the way that trees communicate through different signals in their leaves and the scents that they put out. And it's like that humans aren't so different from the plant world or the animal world. It's just that we keep ourselves so busy and we keep our minds so riddled with these constant pursuits that we tend to follow after, that we forget that just sitting in silence or just observing and freeing our mind of the burdens and instead just trying to connect with what's around us allows us to take part in this universal communication.
I love talking about this. I really do. I could talk about this forever. Well, and I think that one of the reasons I love the book, The Alchemist, and one of the principles in it is because I do believe this with all my heart, that you will never be able to escape from your heart. This is a quote from Paulo Coelho. Is that how you pronounce his name, I believe? But it says, you will never be able to escape from your heart. So it's better to listen to what it has to say. So many people don't listen to their heart, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you get told that, you know, I've got so many different theories as to why it is people get told, you know, their hearts, you know, what their heart's desires are, you know, frivolous or fantasical to follow. But realistically, I mean, your heart is all that matters. Your heart is the gateway to your inner self, to your true self, and to finding that everlasting joy that quite honestly makes the knocks and makes the difficult parts of just day-to-day life all worth it, because otherwise, you know, who are you or what are you if your happiness is all caught up in the impermanence of the human world or an income or in a relationship or in your appearance or, you know, in a pet or anything like that. If you're putting all of your eggs into somebody else's basket, and, you know, we've seen, you know, with the recent things that have been going on in the world, you know, life can change pretty drastically and it can get out of control rather quickly. And if you're staking your happiness on outside influences, at some point you're going to be left with nothing. And rather than scrambling as though, you know, as a lot of people do, myself, you know, having experienced it a time or two also, it's nice to kind of have this safety net and go, oh, wait, no, I was just caught up in this trap. Realistically, my happiness lies within.
Yeah, it does. It really does, excuse me, for all of us. When you say the word impermanence, I always think of Pema Chodron, who is an incredible guru who wrote the book. One of the books that she wrote was When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times. I know you're familiar with the book, but it talks about impermanence, you know, and we don't deal with impermanence very well. We don't deal with loss very well, but it is actually a part of life, and it's part of one of the principles that you learn in The Alchemist as well. You know, through his journey, there were many losses. There was much impermanence. And yet he continued, you know, to keep moving forward and believing and following his heart.
Right. He realized that, you know, he could go back to this safe life, this comfortable life of being a shepherd where nothing changes and everything's very cultivated and it's an easy way of life because you're not taking any risks. Or he could continue to follow his heart, and the treasure that he finds at the end of this journey is worth all of the heartache that was involved and the in-between. And it's so much more rewarding, so much more enriching to your soul, to your inner self, than it would be of a long, dull life of playing it safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've been friends for a while now, and I have to say, I think you're probably one of the least materialistic human beings I've ever met. And so, but seriously, let's talk about that. Why do you think people become so materialistic?
Well, you know, I think that it's a lot of society. You know, it's a lot of the way that the world is, presented to particularly children and young adults. It's presented to people in a way that, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, in the scale of positive and negative, but it's something that is easy. It's an easy way to say, oh, this thing is better than that thing. It's very rational. It's easy for our mind to cling on to. So when we start thinking that things are, it's more desirable to have the better thing than the not so good thing, then it sort of just spinballs from there. And it is a difficult trap to get it, you know, it is difficult to get into and it's difficult to get out of. And I do feel for people that are caught in that trap. And it, because, you know, for a little while, it almost does seem like things, it makes things better. But again, there's always going to be those quiet moments where if you have all the things in the world, you're going to have these quiet moments that are going to nag at you and going to ask, you know, what it is that really, what other thing do you need? And it's something I try to remind my kids, you know, kids, they see something that their friends have or that they want. And I always try to remind them, you know, where is your joy? Is that where you find your joy? You know, do mm-hmm. you want to spend the money that you earned, you know, doing these chores on something, are you getting joy from that? Is, you know, that where, and sometimes their answer is yes. You know, my mm-hmm. son, my 10-year-old son's really into music and he just bought a really expensive piece of electronic music equipment. And he really does truly derive a lot of his joy from creating music. And so he thought about it for a long time and he wound up making the purchase. But even since then, he's come back to me and he said, you know, it does make me happy, but swinging on our swing set and watching the sunset makes me happy too. And that's free.
Oh, I love it. Love that. And he's very talented too. But you know, I think another message in the book or principle in the Alchemist is altruism. You know?
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. And let's talk about that.
I would say altruism, you know, is just it's a way to definitively express gratitude, because when you're grateful for what you have, you don't mind giving it to other people, whether it's time, whether it's money, whether it's acts, anything like that. And, you know, I find myself struggling with that a lot as a mom of three young kids. You know, it's like, where do I find the time to do anything altruistic? You know, where do I find the money to do anything altruistic? But when you start feeling like, oh, my life is abundant, you know, my life is not, of course, I am busy, you know, in the physical world, but realistically, time, you know, my time, I can always fit something else in. There's always something that you can cut out to help. You know, there's an elderly couple down the street, and we go over and we help them with technology. And
oh, I love that. Woman
and, yeah, you know, and it's like, it takes us an hour. You know, they make us iced tea. You know, and it's like, it's not that big of a deal, but when we leave, you know, the kids and I all feel really good about it. You know, we feel good about ourselves, and the couple that we help, they feel good. And it's like everybody leaves us with this wonderful feeling, and you think, you know, it was just an hour. You know, how much, yep. How often do you waste an hour a week? You know, even if you're very, very busy and you're only wasting 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, at some point that 5 minutes does add up. And if you put it towards something that is altruistic, you get this wonderful feeling and folds back. And, you know, you've put out this wonderful energy, and those people, then other people have that good energy in them from somebody, you know, helping them, and it just, it makes the world a really better place with a very simple, kind act.
Oh, imagine if everyone out there listening did that 1 hour a week, you know,
just
right. 1 hour
yeah.
a week. I had an experience, I won't go into it, last week, an elderly neighbor too. I went over and helped her with something else. But I have felt good all week long because of it, you know, and I'd let it go too long, you know, over the COVID-19, you know, I see, you know, the front of her house every day and make sure, you know, kind of checking in. And I know other neighbors are checking in on her as well, but to actually go over and have a conversation and help her with something, it was the most amazing feeling, and I'm still carrying it with me. That's the beautiful part about it. But, you know, imagine what a beautiful place, what a beautiful world. I think it's a song, actually. What a beautiful world it would be, you know, if everybody was more altruistic. But let's do a mantra. I didn't ask you what it was ahead of time, but would you like to end this segment?
Sure.
Yeah, let's end it with a nice mantra.
But we'll end it with, since we were just talking about altruism, is one for it's called Om Mani Padme Hum, and it's basically, it's a pretty pretty well-known Tibetan chant, and it's basically just for compassion, to have compassion for yourself, have compassion for your fellow humans and plants and animals as well.
Beautiful.
So
let's
everybody
do it.
Closes their eyes, big deep breath. Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme Hum.
Autumn Connolly, thank you so much, everyone. Thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Listening to. You can contact Autumn at meditatewithautumn@gmail.com. We've got Mary Holland coming up next. Everyone, stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and we have a very special guest on the line. Her name is Mary Holland, and she serves as general counsel and vice chair on the board at Children's Health Defense. She left the faculty of New York University School of Law, where she served for 17 years, most recently directing its graduate lawyering program. And Mary received her Master's of Arts and Juris Doctorate degrees from Columbia University and her undergraduate degree from Harvard University. She has worked in international public and private law, and Mary is the co-author of Vaccine Epidemic and the HPV Vaccine on Trial, Seeking Justice for a Generation Betrayed. Always a pleasure. Mary Holland, welcome back to One Life Radio.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. It is. And everyone out there listening, childrenshealthdefense.org is the website that you can reach Mary at. Okay, so you guys have been really busy at the Children's Health Defense. Your group is currently fighting. You have. You've been all over the world, literally.
We have been fighting hard for that.
I know. And like, I'll tell you what, I, for one, appreciate it because I think it's such an important thing that what you do at the Children's Health Defense. So, you know, your group is currently fighting issues around the world, like we said, regarding vaccine mandates and overall human rights. So before we dive in, can you remind our listeners about the mission of the Children's Health Defense?
Sure. So it's a slightly broader mission. The mission is to educate people about the exposures that are harming the health of our children. 54% of American children today have some kind of chronic health condition. So we also litigate to make that happen. We want to not only hold those responsible accountable, but we want to prevent these kinds of exposures from happening in the future. So our main instruments are through education, and we have a free newsletter that your listeners can sign up for. Just go to the Children's Health Defense website, and you can sign up for free for a newsletter, and we litigate. And it's helpful if we have members in states so that we can litigate on their behalf. And then for $10, you're going to get a lifetime membership. So that's sort of our mission. And we have definitely focused quite a bit on vaccine exposures and vaccine safety, that we really don't believe there are the kind of safeguards that people need. But we're also litigating around wireless harms. We've brought a lawsuit against the Federal Communications Commission. We think that the guidelines that they're using to decide on whether or not wireless is and 5G is going to have harmful effects on human health are inadequate. We think those rules have been in place since the 1990s, and they just aren't up to speed. They're not up to snuff. Mm-hmm. And we've also, you know, written a lot about glyphosate, about fluoride, other toxic exposures for children.
Yeah,
and as you say, human rights, I think now we're starting to at least, you know, stand up in, you know, in support of freedom and human rights, especially freedom from vaccine mandates, which every day seem more threatening given the COVID pandemic that we're in and the way in which governments around the world are approaching COVID.
Yeah. It's a little scary. It is, I think, for everyone out there listening, because there's just so much that we don't know. But you recently attended a huge protest against lockdown measures in Berlin, Germany. What are these lockdown measures? What were they? And was the protest successful?
Yes. Last weekend was in Berlin with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and we joined a million other people from all over Europe to stand in solidarity for peace, freedom, human rights, free expression, and respect for one another. And it was extremely powerful and moving to be with so many people. It was absolutely, the protest that we were at was absolutely peaceful. It was extremely well organized by a German group called Querdenken, which stands for thinking outside the box. It's completely apolitical. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was invited to speak, and he spoke about how threatening some of these measures are, about, you know, mandates for vaccines or contact tracing or the inability to assemble in public or the inability to leave your own home. These things, people wouldn't accept them but for this pandemic context. And he said, you know, governments love wars and they love pandemics in the same way, because they can get people to obey in a way that they would never be able to do in peacetime. And so, you know, we're not saying that the pandemic is a fraud at all. We know that there's a real illness out there that is, you know, causing severe injury and death to some. We're not minimizing that at all. But we are saying that some of these measures that are being put in place, and those that seem to be benefiting, are the entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, the people whose stock portfolios have risen by a third to a half since the lockdown happened. We're questioning, you know, whether in fact all of what's happening is truly democratic, whether it's truly in the interests of people. I mean, globally, we are decimating poor people and we're decimating the middle class, and we're having a real upward surge of wealth to a very small billionaire elite. that really has a deep interest in global surveillance and in vaccine mandates and in vaccine certificates, sort of proof that you have been vaccinated. And so we at least need to be asking these questions and standing up together with others who are standing for freedom and human rights and transparency. And one of the things that Robert F. Kennedy also mentioned there was one of our problems is really the censorship or at least the lack of good faith in mainstream media. Robert sort of joked at the beginning, you know, the media is going to report that I met with 5,000 neo-Nazis. And sure enough, you know, it says that basically we were somehow involved with 200 far-right people who stormed the parliament. Well,
wow.
The organizers had zero to do with it. We had zero to do with it. And here is this demonstration of a million people, Bernadette, from all over Europe. And what gets the press? What gets the BBC? What gets Daily Coast? What piques yep. their interest? The 200 people that show up on the steps with some right-wing slogans.
Right.
I mean, it's just so...
Well, and you're going to have that at any protest. You're going to always have that at a protest,
yeah, of course,
you know?
And you're always going to have a range of people, but I think the story has to be the vast majority at something like that. And the vast majority was about peace and it was about inclusion and it was about, you know, for human rights of every kind. And yet the story was exactly the opposite, which is frustrating, but
wow.
nothing unexpected. It was extremely empowering to see. And one of the things I think is that people in Europe who in living memory lived through communism, they lived through fascism, they lived through the division of Germany, families separated on both sides of the wall. Mm-hmm. I think these people really understand what totalitarian government means. They really understand what the deprivation of democracy and the deprivation of human rights means. And I think they get it in a more visceral, communal way than we do in the United States. We've been tremendously fortunate. We haven't lived through those things. Wars have been on other shores.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like this reinforced that people in Europe, and I think people in Latin America and Asia and Africa, I think they understand the threats of these shutdown measures more acutely and more perceptively than people do in the United States.
So well said. Oh my gosh, I could listen to you forever. I wish I would have gone to law school and you were my professor. I love listening to you, I swear. But we'll be right back. Station identification. Everyone, stay tuned. More coming up with Powerhouse Mary Holland. We will be right back. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and Mary Holland is with us. She is continuing to give us an update on the Children's Health Defense. Mary serves as general counsel and vice chair of the board at Children's Health Defense. She is an amazing international public and private law speaker and the author of Vaccine Epidemic, or I should say the co-author of Vaccine Epidemic and the HPV Vaccine on Trial, Seeking Justice for a Generation Betrayed. Mary received her Master's of Arts and Juris Doctor degrees from Columbia University and her undergraduate degree from Harvard. And it's such an honor to have her on the show. As I said, we're giving an update from the Children's Health Defense. Okay, so right before the break, we talked about Facebook. Okay, so I can only only imagine what's going on with that. But, you know, you're in a lawsuit with Facebook, right? What's going on?
We are. Well, I think in general, there's a lot of criticism today about Facebook from lots of different quarters, but there's a recognition that Facebook is in some ways more powerful than any government in the world, that about a third of the global population is on this platform, and a lot of people get their news from this source. It's a very important means of communication. So we brought a lawsuit because over a year ago, Facebook came into a partnership with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a government agency, part of Health and Human Services. And they entered into a partnership, and Facebook, when we would post information about vaccines, about different health problems that children were encountering, they would put warnings on our website. They would say, mm-hmm. this is false information. They would say, our fact checkers have said that this is false, or this is partially false, or they would simply not permit a video that we would put up on the website. And then they would say, go to the CDC website for accurate and up-to-date information, clearly implying that our information was inaccurate and not up-to-date. And in addition to that, they took down the donate button, where we had been, you know, deriving, you know, a significant revenue stream, which we deeply appreciate because we're a nonprofit and we only can do our work based on contributions.
Absolutely.
So our theory, Bernadette, is that because Facebook is directly, so there's a federal law that gives internet providers, it gives them protection from being sued for things that get put on the page, not by them. It's called mm-hmm. the Communications Decency Act. And that makes perfect sense, right? If you're just
right.
like Yahoo, or if you're Google Mail, you know, you can't really be responsible for what people put up. But the law says, hey, if you actually post things, if you actually are putting content on people's pages, then that liability protection is off. So on that theory that they have been posting information on our website that is not accurate and that is harming us, and because they have been acting in collusion with the Centers for Disease Control and by extension with the World Health Organization, we're arguing that they are violating our First Amendment rights, and they're also violating our Fifth Amendment rights because
Absolutely.
This is a government taking. They took down our donate button. And so we have filed in Facebook's home turf. We filed in the Northern District of California in federal court. We're also alleging that there's a racketeering dimension to this, that because Facebook, people often don't recognize, they are heavily invested in developing vaccines themselves. They mm-hmm. have a business model that includes vaccines, also obviously doing lots of advertising for the pharmaceutical industry and for vaccines in particular. And they also are backing efforts in 5G because they're very interested in the high-speed internet and the level of data harvesting that permits. And they don't tell people that. And so, again, they've taken down information that we've posted about wireless harms and 5G. So we are optimistic, Bernadette, that we have a case. We are in process where, you know, we have served the defendants. And we think this is really important because Facebook is basically, it has become kind of today's world's printing press.
And Absolutely.
Obviously, governments have an interest in censoring bad news. They don't like to be criticized. We all get that. And we believe that because Facebook partnered with CDC, the U.S. government is trying to do things through ulterior means that they mm-hmm. can't do directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think we have a case, and, you know, we're looking forward to the opportunity to argue it before the court.
Well, it certainly sounds like collusion to me. Although I'm not a lawyer.
Well, the collusion is open and stated, Bernadette. The question, they don't deny that. They actually put on the website, like the CDC boasts about having worked for months with Facebook. The question will be whether that is, you know, somehow permissible because it's in the public interest or public health. But there's no, the CDC is itself saying that they worked with Facebook to put out, you know, to sort of tamp down on this vaccine misinformation. And mm-hmm. we're saying, listen, just because you call it misinformation doesn't mean it is misinformation.
Doesn't mean it is.
We only put things up on our website, Bernadette, that we have scientists on board. We have scientists on the board. We check what we post. And sad to say, there are a lot of safety problems with the vaccine program. And we're just shining a bright light on it because we feel like that's going to be the best way to overcome these safety problems.
Mm-hmm.
We're not
mm-hmm.
against vaccines. We're not against the CDC. We're not against, you know, a program that they have. But it's got to be safe and it's got to be transparent. And we're highlighting the problems and they don't like it.
Yeah, we've been
Facebook
we've been
doesn't
censored.
Like it, and the CDC doesn't like it.
Yeah, well, we've been censored before too by Facebook over an FDA Wrigley's gum aspartame post that I put out several years ago. They froze our account for I think almost 3 years. But you know, we've only got about 2 minutes left. But you're also fighting the state of New York for denying legitimate medical exemptions, right, to vaccination.
We are indeed. So what happened in New York could happen in every state in the country, Bernadette. And that is, not only did the state repeal a religious exemption, throwing 26,000 kids out of school, but at the same, almost the same time, slightly later, they severely tightened access to medical exemptions. And so they're basically forcing kids who might die when they get vaccinated, they're forcing those kids not to be in school because they're saying, oh, we don't think your doctor's medical exemption is good enough. We think that our school district knows better. Mm. And we're contesting that because from the get-go, from 1905, the U.S. Supreme Court recognized that there are going to be some people who are going to be harmed by vaccines, and there's got to be a principle of harm avoidance. Mm-hmm. And in our view, what New York State is doing is irrational. It's putting children at risk for no reason whatsoever. And we think it's wrong, and we're fighting for it.
Well, thank goodness that there's people like you out there fighting for to protect our freedoms and our rights. And so for people out there listening, you know, if we don't fight these mandates now, what could happen and what can we do? What can we do to help your fight? Oh, there's
thank
the music.
You so much. I think
there's the music.
I think you could. Oh, sorry.
You got 30 time. Seconds. Go ahead. 30 seconds.
Come to the Children's Health Defense website. We really give it. It's all there.
All right. All right, Mary, you've got to come
Thank
back
you.
Like sooner rather than later. I always
Thank
love
you.
Having you on the air and all the education that you put out there for myself and all of our listeners. And it is our pleasure. Everyone,
Thank
I hope you're welcome. Love having you on the show. Mary Holland, everyone, go to the childrenshealthdefense.org. And $10 a month is all you need to do to sign up and help. We need it. We need it now more than ever. We have to hold on to our freedoms. So you know what, everyone, have a great day. It's Labor Day. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your life because you only get one body, one mind, and one life.